Hello everyone, welcome to the new format of Surviving the Matrix. I just thought I'd put my head in here and say hello at the start of the show. And this is not something that I will be doing very often. I don't think it's about me, I think it's about the message. And I have this phobia of cameras or something like that. But I thought I'd come on now and just introduce you to the new show. Over the coming months, I'm going to be bringing you interviews with various people. I'm going to be bringing you interviews with Ben Stewart, Kerri-Ann Cox, an Aboriginal singer here from Australia. She can keep us updated on what's going on with the coal seam gas situation in Western Australia. And all sorts of people will be making their way onto the show. I'm also going to be bringing you many shows in the same format as what I have been bringing you for the last few years on the radio show that I've been doing since 2008. For those of you who are familiar with that show, I'm sure you know what to expect in that regard. But I will be travelling around a lot and bringing you interviews all over the world. And along with that, I'll be letting you know what's going on here in Australia and keeping you informed about the way the situation is developing here. Because what we're seeing around the planet really is a global plutocracy that's being built. And we're seeing different sections of it coming into play all around the world in different countries. And if you really look at it, what you see is it's virtually the same in every country around the world. So we need to get rid of this nationalistic view that we seem to have of the problems that we're facing and look at things a little bit more globally. And I'll also be very much focusing on solutions to the situation that we face during the coming months. Next week I'm going to be bringing you a reworking of an old radio show that I did in 2011. I'm bringing you this show simply because I think it's an important show to bring you early in the piece to just get you up to speed on what's really going on with this reality. The understanding that is brought to you during this program is a very, very empowering understanding, and it's something that's helped me out immensely over the years. It's been a huge source of strength to me, just understanding how the universe works and understanding what this reality is. And so I hope you join me for that show. But for now, welcome to the new format. Thank you for joining me for this very first televised edition of Surviving the Matrix, and I hope you enjoy the coming season. In Lakesh. Freedom is only part of the story and half the truth. Freedom is but the negative aspect of the whole phenomenon, whose positive aspect is responsibleness. In fact, freedom is in danger of degenerating into mere arbitrariness, unless it is lived in terms of responsibleness. And that quote comes from Viktor Frankl. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. Now, something that I have attempted to do with these broadcasts ever since the beginning, way back in 2008 when I started broadcasting on radio, is I have always attempted to keep the message positive. I've done so because there are a lot of people out there pointing out the global situation to you and pointing out the very many reasons we have to be extremely concerned about the situation we're facing. But who, when presenting this information to you, don't seem to present people with any solutions to the problems that we face. And what I've attempted to do with Surviving the Matrix is to bring some balance to this situation and attempt to help people understand that all of the problems that we face and all of the concerns that we have can also be viewed as opportunities for change. Indeed, every problem that you face in life can be seen as an opportunity. It's always an opportunity to overcome the problem. Of course, you have to be aware of the problem in order to overcome it. But I believe that looking at the global situation from a perspective of fear is counterproductive. I think that we need to look at it from a perspective of concern
and see the opportunity that lies in having the knowledge of the global situation. Because, as I said, there are opportunities in all of these problems, folks. And many people, when they discover the global situation, discover the truth about the world that we live in, they move straight into fear. And again, this is counterproductive and does not help alleviate the situation. It's one thing to be aware of it, but it's another thing to actually be working actively to rectify this problem. The problem of government corruption, the problem of corporatism, the problem of commerce being superimposed over the human experience to the point where money and economics is viewed as being more important than people and more important than life. Because unfortunately, that is the situation that we currently face. No matter how much people choose to deny the reality of that, it is the reality. People will be discarded. People will become homeless. People will have their houses stolen from them by the bank simply because they need to do so to balance the books. And many people in our society have grown quite accepting of this. They believe that if people don't pay their bills, then they should be removed from their houses and cast out onto the street. And these bills are all contrived. They're all fiction, folks. Make no mistake about it. They are all contrived. And the way they are contrived is by superimposing a system of interest-based commerce over the minds of the people. You see, our money system itself, the very currency that we pass around to each other, is created by a private bank which does so and charges the government interest on the use of their money, which immediately places everybody who uses money into a state of artificially manufactured debt. And it's actually worse than that, folks. That's actually a simplistic way of looking at it. And when I say they manufacture the money, what I'm really talking about is they manufacture the paper that we use as money. Because, in fact, money is created when people take out loans. People create money themselves. But that's another story. But essentially what I'm saying here is because our money supply itself, the paper that we use, is privately printed and privately owned and privately run, then there is a debt attached to using that paper. And this has the effect of placing everybody within our society into a state of perpetual self-generating debt, which lasts their entire life and sometimes beyond, thereby passing that debt onto their children. And all of this debt is contrived, all of it is manufactured, all of it is completely unnecessary. And because the worth or value of people within our society is very much based on their economic or social standing, according to the parameters of this society, we tend to readily discard people below us on the social ladder because we deem them to be of less worth or less value than people who have substantial financial interests in the world. And this is a program, folks. This is a programmed reality. It's a fictional reality, and it's a programmed reality. People are quite literally trained to think this way. This is one of the main objectives of the modern scholastic system. If you notice, it's become more and more business-oriented as the generations have gone by, and this makes it possible for sections of society to be discarded one rung at a time, while the people above them on the social ladder never really believed that it could happen to them, when in fact the entire system is designed to slowly move up the social ladder until it has discarded everybody except those who issue the currency. And this will effectively create a two-tiered society whereby we will have a ruling elite and we will have a working class. And there are many people who are quite well off in the world at the moment, mining magnates, shipping magnates, people like this who believe that they will be safe from this system, but ultimately they won't. Eventually it will get that high on the social ladder that everybody who does not control the money supply will be under the control of those who do. Now, we the people, should we choose to step into our power, can prevent all of this from happening because it's all happening due to fictional rules that public trustees have written on paper. Ultimately, that's what's bringing it all about. And it's important for people to bear in mind the uncomfortable truth that if we do not choose to step into our power, then the situation that I've just described for you will occur, because this situation has to occur, because this is the only possible outcome of this money system, which is exactly why this money system has been put in place, to create what is ultimately a two-tiered society, separated only by those who perceive they have power, between the elite and the working class. And these people with perceived power will, of course, be the police and government officials who sit in the middle. These people will be given small modicums of power to make them feel like they have authority over people, which, of course, will serve to give them the confidence they need to oppress the working class. You see, this is the way many people's minds work, folks, especially those with sociopathic tendencies. You know, if you take everybody's power away from them and reduce people to the point that they are quite literally abject slaves without their knowledge, and then you start giving small tokens of power to people within the group, then their egos will always take over and they will always start throwing their weight around. And if you watch which people throw their weight around the heaviest, then you find the sociopaths within the crowd, and those are the ones that they elevate to positions of authority, because they know that they have no empathy and they know that they are quite happy to harvest energy from the population around them. And that's what many people do. And in many ways, it becomes very difficult to judge these people, because it is in fact quite natural for people to react this way when placed into such a situation. You see, by taking people's inherent power and value from them, you effectively disconnect them from the true energy source of the universe, and the most ready source of energy for these people then becomes the people around them. And so that's where they harvest their energy. And that's why people who are so disconnected make the best leaders, in inverted commas, the best handlers, the best control mechanisms for this system. But you see, that is ultimately the plan, folks. The plan is to create a two-tiered society whereby the only separation between the two will be the controlling hand, which controls the debt slaves, and all of whom are controlled and who do the bidding of those who issue the paper. And this process is going to be achieved and is in fact well underway, and is occurring all due to the parameters of a UN directive known as Agenda 21. I'm sure many people out there listening to this show may have heard of this directive. But the thing is that when looking at Agenda 21, many people understand that it is a depopulation program. It is a program designed to corral humankind into manageable portions, which will be achieved via placing them within controlled sections of population, concentrated areas of population, and to return the earth to nature, or that's what people perceive. That's the way it's presented to the world. But they are not quite sure how it is going to be carried out. They're expecting some massive depopulation plan whereby suddenly Western countries get locked down into a police state and everyone's dragged off to FEMA camps or something. This seems to be what people are expecting. But the reality is that Agenda 21 is being implemented right now, right under everybody's noses, and it's happening in a very subtle manner, and by using means which most people would perceive to be completely unrelated, and yet which are all connected. Now, to see these connections, it's extremely important for people to realize that the money system, money itself, is the glue that is used to hold this control mechanism together. Therefore, money connects everything together. Money is the catalyst for the whole thing. When you look at the system of commerce that's been superimposed over our societies and how it slowly moves up the rungs of the social ladder, whereby people are discarded according to their economic worth, you begin to see how the depopulation plan is coming into effect. And when you look at concentrated pockets of civilization and returning the Earth to nature, in inverted commas, one might ask, well, how is this to be achieved? Because people always live in the country. Many people live in the country. They always have and they always will. But what happens if you destroy the groundwater in the country so that people who do live in the country, people who run farms, simply cannot stay there anymore? It simply doesn't become viable to ship water in all the time. Not to mention the fact that the water that is coming out of the ground is now toxic. Enter coal seam gas mining. Think about coal seam gas mining, folks. We don't actually need gas as an energy source. We simply don't. There are other means of energy we could have. I mean, look at Nikola Tesla. He was going to give the whole world free energy back at the turn of the last century, and they wouldn't allow him to do it because his financiers realized that they were not able to meter his energy device, and so therefore there was no economic gain in them doing so. As we all know, many of the problems we face as a society and many of the most pollutive industries on the planet exist solely to meet our energy needs. And indeed, it is the demand for energy which perpetuates these industries. And it's these industries that keeps many people working. Because let's face it, everybody consumes energy in order to survive. You need energy to run your house, to run your stove, to run your car. The demand for energy is one of the things that makes the modern world go around. And if the people were to obtain access to free energy, then it would most certainly free them from debt slavery. So, of course, they can't allow free energy to exist. But the point is, we don't need to be harvesting coal seam gas in order to meet our energy needs. There are far better ways of doing things. So what is the real purpose of coal seam gas? Well, when you look at it, the only guaranteed outcome from having a gas well somewhere is that it's going to pollute the groundwater below the gas well. And you can see this is happening in everywhere where they've had these gas wells, folks. We're seeing methane coming up in streams. We're seeing people lighting their taps on fire and wells being polluted. And so that obviously is the real purpose of coal seam gas mining. And this is effectively driving people out of the country and away from their traditional farmlands and forcing them into concentrated pockets of civilization. And this will be ongoing. If you watch this over the next few years, you are going to see more and more people moving from their farms because they are forced to, because it's too toxic to live there anymore. And this is how these sections of population are being cleared and forced to move into the cities. You see, it isn't about returning the country to nature. It's about making the country available for sustainable resource practices. And what are sustainable resource practices? Does this mean we want to be able to harvest resources from the country and allow it to still sustain nature? No, it isn't. It's about sustaining the industry for as long as you can and doing whatever you can to make sure you can keep exploiting the area. That's what sustainable development is all about. It's just wrapped up in a package and painted green so people think it's ecologically friendly when it is exactly the opposite. I tell you, folks, one thing you can use as a guideline in a lot of this sort of stuff is just look at what Al Gore's saying and believe the opposite, because it's debatable whether a true word ever came from the mouth of Al Gore. But I digress. But the point I'm attempting to make here, ladies and gentlemen, is that it isn't going to be this huge sweep across the nation where people are gathered up and thrown into FEMA camps. It's going to be a gradual process. It is a gradual process, and this gradual process is underway right now. New laws that are coming in England that they're trying to bring in, I'm not sure whether they've brought them in yet, but they're certainly talking about it, which will effectively outlaw homelessness. And this should have the effect of filling the jails nicely, especially when you can grasp the concept that people are made homeless due to the economic model, and that homelessness and the discarding of the population is a natural byproduct of this corrupt economic system. And so there's your depopulation plan in motion. There is Agenda 21 in motion. Couple this with coal seam gas mining, the destruction of the water table. Couple this with the introduction of GM crops, which effectively cause sterility in those who consume them over successive generations. We've seen that tests done on animals clearly result in sterility by the third generation in all animals that have been tested consuming GM food. Again, this is Agenda 21 in motion, depopulation in motion. And it's easy to force people into consuming GM food simply by placing them in positions of poverty and providing unlabeled GM food at cheap supermarkets. The cheap brand, the home brand, the no-name brand, all of these products are likely GM and all are designed to depopulate what is perceived to be the lower classes of society, those who are not economically viable. And of course, this system does everything it can to ensure that people remain in a state which is not economically viable. And another way this is done is through a process of what I call total criminalization. And the concept of total criminalization is something that is very attractive to governments, because if you make everybody a criminal, then suddenly everyone becomes uniform in the eyes of the law. And that's very much what they would like. And the way they do this is they just gradually introduce more and more laws so that eventually they make almost everything a crime. It becomes a crime not to have two hands on the wheel when you're driving your car. It becomes a crime to put your child on your shoulders when you're walking down the street. It becomes a crime to park your car in front of your house. It becomes a crime to put your rubbish bin out on the wrong day. It becomes a crime to cross some imaginary line somewhere. It becomes a crime to walk on the grass in the local park. It becomes a crime to do all of the things that you would normally do as a normal functioning human being. And then they attach fines to these breaches of so-called law. So this, again, places economic stress on people. Eventually, they make almost everything a crime so that you are getting fined all the time. And of course, you can't meet these fines. And so, again, you are placed in financial hardship. This, again, leads to homelessness, which eventually leads to prison terms. And of course, there should be no doubt in anybody's minds that those in prison are being fed GM foods. So here we see how the introduction of legislation is again contributing towards the UN depopulation program. And something very important to understand about legislation when looking at the world today and asking yourself why there is so much crime in the world today is that the reason there is so much crime is because the government is introducing more and more legislation, thereby making almost everything a crime. Because the more legislation that is enacted, obviously, the more crime is created. And that is the main purpose of legislation. It isn't to keep people safe, it's to create crime and thereby create the mechanism by which the wealth of the people may be extracted from them via fines and jail terms. That's the thing, folks. If you can't pay the fine, then they're happy to put you into prison and you can make number plates and other things that they need to run their slavery system. That's how it works. And all of these things are ongoing, ladies and gentlemen. They're all happening right now. And while all of these little subtle things are happening in society designed to place people in a state of manufactured financial stress, and is wholly manufactured and wholly artificial and wholly contrived, while this is all going on, people aren't noticing it because they are distracted, waiting for a big cataclysm, waiting for a big catastrophe, waiting for a global financial crash or the outbreak of World War III or Planet X to come or a global police state to suddenly be announced and everyone locked into FEMA camps, martial law to be declared. Everybody's waiting for a catastrophe to happen and they're simply not paying attention to that which is happening all around them right now. And they're not seeing how it all connects together. Classic misdirection. And unfortunately, I find that this is a lot of what is happening in the alternate research community. Misdirection. Many people spend their time arguing over details, arguing over the finer points of certain things. For example, people have been arguing for the last 12 years over how 9/11 was carried out. And personally, I think it's a waste of time arguing over the details, because the fact of the matter is that we will never know how it was carried out until we rein this system in. We can debate and speculate all we like, but until we bring our governments under control, the truth is that we'll never know. And I believe that all we really need to know about 9/11 at the moment is the fact that Arabs did not do it. That is absolutely obvious. And it becomes even more obvious when one sees the result of 9/11 and what Western governments have been able to inflict upon the rest of the world in the name of 9/11 since the event occurred. And you just have to look at that, and it becomes very, very obvious who benefited from the event, and it certainly wasn't the Arab nations. So I don't really need to argue over the details. We need to pay attention to what's going on around us. I truly do believe this. There's so much stuff out there which is designed, I believe, to misdirect people and keep people arguing over the finer points of things. Sure, some details are necessary, but ultimately, it's no good arguing over things that we simply will never know the answers to. Because by doing so, we're not facing the actual problem itself. And were we to face that problem, then the answers to all of these questions would, I believe, be revealed by default. And so I think that's where the attention needs to go. We need to see what the remedy to our situation is. I mean, obviously, we do have a problem, folks. We are in a very, very precarious situation as a species at the moment. And it's a problem that does need to be dealt with. And I think that we need to realize that this problem exists, and we need to start working towards viable solutions to the problem. And I truly believe the solution lies in a united community. I really do believe this. I believe that if we could all simply put down our stuff with each other and start to respect each other, then we would be able to change the world very, very quickly. I think the divide and conquer strategy has worked very, very effectively on our society, and that is the main reason these problems still exist. And no matter what we do, no matter how many petitions we write, no matter who we vote in and who we vote out, it never changes. Things just keep going along in the same direction. And this is because we're attempting to use the parameters of the system to deal with the system, when really we have the potential and we have the power to step above the system and rein the whole thing in and hold our public trustees accountable for their actions. We have the power to do this, but it will only be achieved by a united community, and that type of unity will only ever be achieved by people who are willing to respect one another. And so there is the solution right there. The solution is as simple as people changing their perspective and changing their attitude, not only towards the people around them, but also towards themselves. Because I've always found that a lack of respect for other people always has its basis in one's lack of respect for themselves. And again, this is a programmed reality that people are forced to endure simply by operating within the parameters of this system. This is a very clever system, folks, and it's designed to completely mess up the human psyche, and you've got to give it 10 points for effectiveness. But having said all of that, I do truly believe that the tide is about to turn, folks. I believe that things are about to change. And I'm certainly not suggesting that people lapse into complacency simply because I said that. Because if things are going to change, it will take the participation of the people in order for it to happen. But I just feel it. I just truly do believe that that's what this time in history is about, and that things are indeed about to change. More and more people are beginning to question this reality and question this system. And I think this is something that most people can do if they really think about it. Something they can do when looking at this whole system, this whole social system, this whole economic system, this whole government system that we've got, is they can ask themselves if their life is a life of comfort, if their life is a life of abundance. And if it isn't, to ask themselves why. Why are you forced to run so hard on the treadmill? Why are you forced to be enslaved to an economic model which is interest-based and designed to place you in scarcity? Why is our system like this? Why are there laws making it illegal to feed homeless people? Why is it when a supermarket throws food out at the end of the day, they put it in a locked dumpster and won't simply give it to poor people? Why are they attempting to bring in laws which may outlaw homelessness? Why do we have a system which was designed by mankind to service mankind's needs, and yet mankind has become the most expendable thing within its parameters? Because when you ask yourself these questions, it becomes clear that what has happened to our societies is that we have had a slavery system gradually superimposed over our reality, so that in the modern world today, virtually everybody is forced to live in a state of perpetual self-generating debt as soon as they are old enough to work. What we have here, ladies and gentlemen, is people farming. We have human trafficking via debt slavery. That's what we have, whereby every person within this society has been turned into a commodity, turned into a mechanism by which the criminal ruling banksters at the top of the food chain are able to harvest your wealth. Because real wealth is not measured in terms of possessions. It cannot be judged in terms of financial security. Real wealth is your life, your health. That is what makes you wealthy. If you are a happy, healthy person living in a good environment, then that is wealth. And that's what the banksters harvest from you, my friends. They harvest your time, they harvest your health, they harvest your life, they harvest you. It's extremely important for people to see the reality of this, and it's very much necessary for people to understand that this is a system that is wholly supported by governments and perpetuated by governments, and the reason the governments are able to get away with it is because the people have forgotten what their place in the social hierarchy is. People have forgotten that governments are public servants, they're public trustees, and we actually sit above them in the food chain. They are, in fact, our employees. But through the imposition of the government-controlled education system, this knowledge has been gradually educated out of the masses, and meanwhile the bills and laws have been raised and raised and raised, and people have been taught to run faster and faster and faster on the treadmill, so that now they're running flat out and they don't even realize that they're running. And this, of course, means that they never really have time to look around them and notice what's going on, and notice exactly how this system is run. But when you do, ladies and gentlemen, it becomes obvious that we're being scammed, and we're being scammed by the very people that we employ to manage our infrastructure for us and to keep us safe, the very people that we appoint to positions of trust to manage our society in a honest and caring and decent manner. And they're not doing that, ladies and gentlemen. Our public trustees are not doing that. They are all in breach of trust. And what they are doing is they are using their power, the power that we give them, to steal the wealth of all of our nations. And I think it's about time we paid attention to this fact. Because if we were to turn and pay attention to it from the perspective of a respectful and therefore empowered community, we could change this situation in a day. And there is a real need for us to do this, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, you look around the world today and you've really got to ask the question of how far are we prepared to go? How much are we prepared to take? Are we prepared to allow our planet to be destroyed and the lives of the people on this planet around us to be ruined simply because some people wrote some words down on a piece of paper and dared to call it law? Is that what it takes to control us? Is that all it takes to decimate the human species? Simply writing something down on a piece of paper? Is that all it takes to remove the will of the people and to force the people to comply with their own destruction? You know, I look at all this situation, I really have to ask the question, is that what the human race has become? Have we really been disempowered to that extent that we will allow this to happen? Are we so confused as to what reality is that we really believe this fictional paper-based world is real? You know, recently here in Australia, when the people of a certain part of New South Wales were saying they wanted fluoride taken out of the water, the state minister said that it can't be taken out of the water, that the deal is done and there's nothing that can be done to change it. I heard him say that and I thought, can this man be serious? Does he seriously believe that we can't simply go and unbolt the fluoride tanks? Do they seriously believe that we have to continue to allow poison to be put in our water supply and that there is nothing that can be done to undo this situation because someone wrote some words down on a piece of paper or made an agreement with another individual? Because that is the excuse that he gave. He said, it's done and it can't be undone. Fluoride is here to stay. And personally, I think that if he actually believes that it can't be undone, then he should be immediately taken for psychiatric evaluation. But that's what these politicians appear to believe. They are thoroughly convinced that their fiction is real, and they are thoroughly convinced that people will never question their fiction. But people are, ladies and gentlemen, people are waking up in droves all around the planet, and people are beginning to question the fiction. People that you wouldn't even expect to be aware of the situation are becoming aware of the situation. And in fact, the more the government attempts to lock society down, the more people are waking up to the control mechanism. So ultimately, the government and this control system itself is bringing about its own demise, because the system is ramping up the control grid so much now and in such a hurried manner that the people that are doing it are stumbling. They're making mistakes and they are making themselves obvious. They're making their presence known to people who would never have questioned government before. Now they are seeing that there is a need to do so, especially here in Australia, ladies and gentlemen. Some of the laws that we've had come in here in Australia recently have been quite horrific and have stood as a clear testament to the people of this country that we are turning into a police state. And personally, I don't think there's anything they're ever going to be able to do to make this global police state they wish to build a reality. I really don't. I don't think human consciousness will allow it. I think we will keep moving the goalposts and we will keep finding a way out, because I really am seeing more and more people become aware of this system. I'm seeing more and more people question authority every single day. I'm seeing more and more people become empowered with the knowledge of who and what they are. And that is truly a beautiful thing. Even the people that I've seen going down the Freeman rabbit holes and finding their way through the paper-based fiction are beginning to realize that the key word in it all is fiction, and that we can step above the entire thing once we remember who and what we are and choose to stand in the power of our own flesh. You see, nobody controls the vessel that you inhabit, ladies and gentlemen. The only mind that controls your flesh is yourself, and anybody who claims otherwise is running a slavery system. And once you become aware of it, you start to see the way out of the slavery system. But it has to be done with respect. It has to be done in a peaceful manner. And once you understand how the system works, and once you truly understand and respect yourself, then you really don't see any need to conduct yourself otherwise anyway. Because if you do, if you go into attack mode, really all you're doing is playing right into their hands, and there is a far better way of doing things. Because the way to conduct yourself in any of these situations is from a perspective of empowerment, and, of course, from a perspective of respect. And it all comes down to the individual. In fact, it always has. There are a lot of movements currently being waged in the world. There are movements being waged by the people against many of the symptoms that we face, many of the problems that we face. But all too often, these organizations are still attempting to use the legal system to find a way of making a stand against the actions of our corrupt governments. And by doing this, what they are failing to see is that the modern legal system was not constructed to afford people remedy, but rather to tie people up in red tape and to protect the system. The legal system was designed by the system in order to protect itself. And so we are never going to find a remedy for our current situation by using the parameters that are given to us by the system itself. What we need to do is to remember our place in the social hierarchy and to step above it and to hold our public trustees in breach of trust. I believe this could be done through something like a people's mandate. If you could get enough people together in your country to mandate your will to the government and instruct them to carry out that will, then if they wish to maintain the facade of being a democratic and fair system, they will have no choice but to comply with the will of the people, because a failure to abide by a people's mandate properly delivered to our elected trustees would mean that the government has abdicated its right to govern and would be required to step down. I believe things such as people's mandates could actually achieve a great deal if we could unite the community to the point that we could actually carry one out. And again, this will only happen if people choose to respect each other. And so, ultimately, when you look at this situation, my friends, the solution to all of the problems we face always comes down to the people themselves. Because the power to change the world is in the hands of each one of you out there listening to this show. The key to your own salvation is in your heart. The key to changing this world is in applying your heart and applying your energy and applying your respect to the people around you and to the world at large. If we do this, we can change things. The question is, what's it going to take for it to happen? And well, the answer to that question is participation. That's what it's going to take. And in fact, that is all it would take. And participation, this is something that you can all do right now. If you're out there listening to this, all you have to do is change your perspective. Change the way you interact with people around you. Create some sort of gift culture within your community, even if it's just within the circle of friends that you know, and then attempt to widen that circle. You know, a lot of times we look at the global situation and we can see what the answers are, and we think, well, as soon as people do start respecting each other, as soon as people do start this gift culture, then I'm happy to participate. But the thing is that we're always waiting for someone else to take the first step. And very often there are many other people out there who are always waiting for someone else to take the first step as well. So why not allow yourself to be that one who takes that first step? Why not have the confidence in yourself and the respect for yourself and the respect for others that you see the need to do this? Now, the greatest journey starts with a single step. And the journey that mankind is on, the journey to take us back to where we should be, is a path that we are all traveling. But we have to be aware of the journey. We have to be aware that this is the way we are traveling, and we have to pay attention. And we have to participate in the world in which we live. We face many, many problems, and we often expect other people to fix these problems for us. But really, the only one who can effect any change in our own lives is ourselves. But again, it comes down to our willingness to participate. And often we do participate, but our problem being that we do it from the wrong perspective. We don't do it from a perspective of respect. We don't do it from a perspective of truly knowing who and what we are. And therein lies the real problem. Therein lies the real dilemma. But the beauty of it is that the remedy to this dilemma is so incredibly simple that everybody can participate in the remedy right now. All they have to do is choose to do so. And really, when you look at things from this perspective, it becomes very empowering, because you see that we all can make a difference if we choose to. You see, there is nobody on this earth who actually has any more power than anybody else. The only power that people perceive they have is the power that they are granted from others who choose to give their own power away. Admittedly, often the choice that people make to do this is not a conscious choice. It's a programmed reality, a set of programmed parameters that people are trained to adhere to. And so people cannot always be blamed for the choices they make. But once one becomes aware of the situation and becomes aware of the fact that these choices do exist, then things can be viewed very differently. Because from the very moment that you wake up to the machinations of this control system, you are given the conscious choice as to whether to participate in this system or not. Now, I'm not suggesting that people suddenly become rebels and get themselves into trouble. What I'm suggesting is that people question authority on every possible occasion that they can, and that people refuse to comply with any piece of legislation which interferes with their moral compass. Because ultimately there is only one law on this planet, my friends, and that law can be summed up in three words, eight letters, do no harm. And any legislation that contravenes that law is no law and is entitled to no obedience. You see, it all comes down to your perspective, ladies and gentlemen, and I believe that a great deal could be achieved through a united act of global non-compliance to this slavery system. And all we need to do this is the weight of numbers which could easily be achieved by a community that decided to respect itself. The choice is yours. That is it for me now, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you have enjoyed this first televised edition of Surviving the Matrix, and I hope to bring you many more in the coming weeks and months. As I mentioned near the start of the show, next week I'm going to bring you a reworking of a radio broadcast that I did in 2011, and I'm bringing you this simply for new listeners who may not understand the concept of the energetic universe, because I think it is a very, very important understanding for people to have. And I wish to bring you this program because having this understanding of how reality works and what my connection to reality is has served as a huge source of strength for me over the years. And I wish to be able to share that perspective with you. I truly do believe that once you understand how reality works, then all the fear of this system and all the fear of stepping into your own power simply falls away. And that's why I think it's important to rerun this show for you and to do it so early in the schedule. And so I hope you will join me next week for that broadcast. But again, that is it for me, folks, so I'll have to say goodbye now. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's been a pleasure to have your company. Thank you to anybody who has ever made a contribution to thecrowhouse.com. I will look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take good care until then. In Lakesh.